I hate to say it, but too many times in America, it seems like the goal of life is just to be able to sit on the couch, watch TV, and not work. Is that really God's plan? You'll find out, so stick with us. Welcome to part two of a special series brought to you by Whitehorse Media called God, Satan, Money, and You. We've already been through part one, so this is part two. We're dealing with some big issues of money and our hearts and whether it's wrong to have a lot of money and some of the dangers of having money if we don't use it wisely. And so for part two, our title is called Don't Be a Couch Potato. I'm here with Paul Selko and Rob Knott. We all work together at Whitehorse Media. Paul is our administrative director, and Rob is in charge of our international Bible school, and he's also my associate speaker. So
good to be here today, Steve.
Let's just dive right in. Big topics, practical topics.
That's right. Yeah.
It's hard to it's hard to imagine something more practical than what we do with our money.
That's right.
And as I mentioned in the last program, over 2,000 times in the Bible, it talks about money.
Yes.
So money is not a minor issue. It's a big issue. It's in the Bible, just like the Bible talks about Jesus and the cross and the resurrection and his ascension, his second coming, and God's ultimate plan to get rid of sin, the battle between Christ and Satan. All these are Bible topics, and money is part of the great controversy. So let's start with the text.
Okay.
Our title is Don't Be a Couch Potato. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. Paul said, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat."
Wow, that's pretty
cool. No work, no eat. That's a pretty pointed text, don't you think?
Yeah, it sure is. You know, Steve and Rob, I always thought, when I was a young boy, I always appreciated about my mother that she taught us how to work. You know, my parents had six kids, so my dad was gone a lot at work, and she taught us to work. At a very young age, we would be working on the dairy farm or milking cows or
job security.
Job security. There was always something to do. But you know what? It built in me this work ethic.
Yeah.
And I always appreciated that she taught me that. And that stuck with me when I had young children of my own. My kids are adults now. When they were young, we would get up and we would go cut firewood or we would go do other different chores to do. And I think that's important, this whole idea of work, like you said, Steve, and I think as parents, we need to instill that in our children.
I think too, I think of my own childhood, Paul and Steve. When I would go out and chop the wood for the fire, there's a sense of purpose and meaningfulness that when you're part of a cutting the grass and seeing the beauty of it, a job well done.
Sense of satisfaction that you've accomplished something.
I mean, I remember getting up early going with my dad every day to pour concrete. And, I wouldn't have developed a certain relationship with my dad had I stayed home and been a couch potato, like you said. And so I think, we live in a day and age that almost seems like for young people, work is discouraged. You're not able to work unless you a young person, when I was young, you could just go to work with your dad. Today, they discourage young people from really being able to work. And so we have, as a culture, have kind of formulated this idea of you don't have to go to work.
That's right. I think about my childhood. My dad, he owned a carpet company in Los Angeles. He worked hard. He made money. He provided for us as a family. My dad is deceased now, but my dad and I had a very good relationship. I love him. I have the highest respect for him. But before he became a Christian, which was when I was growing up until I became 20 years old, and then my dad became a Christian after that, my dad never really taught me the importance of working. He worked, but I didn't work. He gave me what I needed. And in my teenage years, I had a couple of small jobs selling carpet estimates door to door, and I worked in a fish store. I loved tropical fish. But I really never had a steady job. I didn't work very much. Most of it was provided for me by my dad. And looking back at my teenage years, I got into a lot of trouble as a teenager. Mm. I got involved in just the wildlife, growing up in the Southern California area, got involved in the discos and the parties and the drugs, the alcohol. And if I would have had a good job, if I would have learned the value of work, I don't think I would have gotten into the trouble that I got into. And thank the Lord, he rescued me and got me out of that when I was 20 years old.
You know, Steve, just commenting on the verse you read, verse 10, about if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. Verse 11, it continues. It says, "For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies." Mm. So one thing leads to another. You know, what is that? Idle hands or the devil's playhouse?
That's right.
We often get into trouble. I think of many, many young people who probably wouldn't have gotten into trouble had they been busy working.
That's right. And these days it seems like, you know, a lot of people just don't want to work. I've been reading a little bit about the Roman Empire and how the Roman Empire eventually disintegrated until it finally fell in 476 AD. And there were different factors. One reason was because the Roman Empire turned against the Christians, against God's people, and there were terrible persecutions. But another reason was because the people, especially in the city of Rome, became dependent upon the government. Mm. Government perks, government handouts, the ruling people, they knew that if they give away enough perks, then the people will vote for them. And they will remain loyal. And so the people became dependent. Mm-hmm. And the more they got from the government, these handouts, this and that.
Idleness.
Yeah, idleness grew, and they started using what they had to entertain themselves. Mm-hmm. Their focus became the circus and the Colosseum and watching gladiators, etc. And they just became lazy. They didn't work, they didn't earn their keep, they were dependent upon the government, they got involved in just, eat, drink today, tomorrow we die, and just let's just entertain ourselves. Mm. And I hate to say it, I think most people can see it, that we are, as a nation in America, we are fast heading down in that direction, and we're disintegrating as a country.
So people need to learn to take care of themselves, right? Paul says in 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, "But if anyone that does not provide for his own, especially for those of his own household, that denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So this is really an important issue to God. We need to learn and teach our children how to work and how to provide for their own home. That's and not depend maybe on the government or depend on somebody else to provide for you.
Right. And I'm not saying there's never a time when we should receive a government check. I mean, I haven't gotten quite old enough where I want to start taking Social Security. I can at this age, but I'm waiting a little bit longer, kind of wrestling with how long I should wait. But I've been paying into Social Security, and I'm going to take out. But if I was younger, and if I got hurt or I had some kind of disability, and I was getting a government check, I think from what I've learned, many people, they don't want to go back to work because if they make enough money over the threshold, then they lose their government checks. And so I think if a person can work, it's wrong just to be taking the checks and living that way and not working if you can work.
There are legitimate times when...
That's right. But if I was in that situation, let's say I was disabled and I started getting better, and let's just say I was getting $1,000 a month from the government, and if I worked and if I made more than $1,000, I would lose my $1,000 from the government. What I would probably do is I would work up to $900. I would get my $900 from my work, and then I would get my $1,000 from the government. And as soon as I got that $1,900, then I would cross the line. And I would say, I'm going to get a good job or have a job, but I would continue to work. And then I think that if I did that, instead of having $1,900, then the more I work, I would be able to make another $1,000 or $2,000 or hopefully more. And then I'd be making more money than I would be just getting my checks from the government. Mm-hmm. And then the most important thing is I'd feel better about myself. And I would be able to take
the extra money that I'm giving, and I would be able to give more in my tithes and my offerings to help others and support the Lord's work. And I'd feel good about myself that I'm doing something more with my life.
And I think the Lord would, he does reward that type of initiative where we want to work, we want to do more. And Proverbs 12:24 says, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. So
I like to go clear back to Genesis. Everything is the foundation block in my mind when it comes to Bible principles. And if you go to Genesis 2, verse 14, you know, God had made this perfect world, and this is before sin. God blessed them and wanted them to be fruitful and multiply. And it says in verse 14, verse 15, it says, then the Lord took the man and put him in the garden of Eden to tend and keep it. Mm-hmm. So before the thorns and the thistles and sweating, and God had given them a job to manage creation. And all through the scriptures, you see where work is a blessing, work is beneficial to our health. It gives us, you know, Steve and I were in Delaware this last week, and we met a gentleman who used to be in the Air Force, and he was stationed in Okinawa in Japan. And he was telling us that the most centenarians, those who live over 100 years old, live in Okinawa. And they have these blue zones in the world where certain people groups follow certain ways of living, and they live to be more than 100 years old. And one of the things that he asked me, why, Rob, do you think they live longer? And I said, because they have purpose. Wow. And he says, that's amazing. Most people don't understand that. And, you know, I think many people, like my grandmother, she lived to be in her mid-90s, but because there was no one around and really nothing to do, I really think the reason she died more than anything is she lost purpose.
Yeah.
If she would have had to come and help me or sweep the house every day or do something, I think she would have lived longer. And I think all of us, when it comes to purpose, when I think of Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, they had everything at their, because it was lush and beautiful, and really you didn't have to work hard.
And idleness, it wasn't just sexual sin, it was fullness of bread and idleness that resulted in the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yes, correct.
That's right. Let me share another thought from the Ten Commandments. Wow. Many of us believe, I mean, we do here at White Horse Media, and I'm sure many are watching also, believe in the Ten Commandments. We know that, or many of us know, that in the book of Revelation, chapter 14, verse 12, God describes a group of people who are commandment keepers. Revelation 14, 12 says, here is the patience of the saints. Mm-hmm. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. So this verse talks about commandment-keeping people. And as I've been thinking about this whole topic of money and work and different things, my mind was brought again to the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, where in verse 1 it says, God spoke all these words, and then he gave the Ten Commandments. And I was recently struck by the fourth commandment, verse 8, that says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And many of us are Sabbath keepers. We believe in keeping the seventh-day Sabbath. But there's more to the fourth commandment than just what day you keep. When you look closely at the text, it says in verse 9, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work. So the command to keep the seventh-day Sabbath is connected to the command to work. You got to work during the 6 days, and then you rest on the seventh day. So let's say we rest on the seventh day, but we're lazy and we don't have a job, or we don't want a job. If we don't want a job, but we still, you know, go to church on the seventh day, we really are violating the fourth commandment because we're not developing the habit and the principle of working. And then when you go to the eighth commandment says in verse 15, you shall not steal. And I thought about that, and it seems to me that if a person works, then they're less likely to feel the need to steal. That's right. Because they've got their own things. And then in the 10th commandment, verse 17 says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. So it seems to me that if you're working and earning an income and providing for your family and you're being responsible in that way, then you're less likely to be tempted to steal, and you're also less likely to be tempted to covet anything that is your neighbor's simply because you have your own things, right, because you're being responsible in the sight of God and you're working.
That's good.
Amen. I was thinking of the animal world. You know, we talk about that, probably we'll mention this many times as we go through this series about the ant, you know, providing, the beaver who builds his dam. There's many animals and creatures, and I go back to Genesis again, where God worked those first 6 days. The first 3 days, he provided space for the next 3 days in filling those spaces. And it's just amazing, you know, he rests the seventh day and commands us to rest with him, and he continues to work. In Hebrews 1:3, I really like it. It says, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person and upholding all things by the word of his power. Everything is held together by God. Mm. He's a worker, and he wants us to realize that work is a blessing. And I think that's what we're trying to convey today, is that work is meant to be a blessing.
That's right. Paul, I think you had some scriptures about from Proverbs about laziness. The Bible does talk about laziness, doesn't it?
It does. You know, Proverbs 10:4 says, he who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. And let's see. Oh, there's one in Proverbs 24, verse 30. It's kind of I like this. It's Solomon. He says, I went by the field of a lazy man and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone walls were broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well, and I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. So over and over, these verses pop up where he says, if you're not working, poverty is going to be the result. You're going to go hungry. That's what he's saying.
Right. Yeah, there's... I've read quite a bit of Dave Ramsey's material, and Dave Ramsey basically says that there's three ways to grow your money. Number one, and there are some exceptions. I know if someone gets an inheritance, but number one is by getting a job, is by working. The next way is by cutting your costs, trying to be, you know, frugal, and if Verizon is costing you too much, you know, you might switch to another
less than you make.
Yeah, another carrier. So you get a job, you work, and then you cut your costs. And then the next way Ramsey also recommends is you build up an emergency fund and you invest your money wisely, thinking long term, which we'll talk more about that later. But, you know, there's principles, there's biblical principles that we need to follow. And we can't, we shouldn't just focus on what the Bible says about doctrinal issues. We need to realize that the Bible also deals with practical issues such as getting a job, not being a couch potato, not just, you know, aimlessly living your life. And I think that the temptation in this land is to expect handouts, but that doesn't build self-respect.
That's right.
It doesn't build income that will really meet your needs later on in life, and that will make you feel good because you have more to give to others and help them.
That's right. And when you work, you're actually building your skill set and making yourself more valuable too. You know, in the business world, it says that everyone is paid two coins, cash and experience. Take the experience first and the cash will come later. You know, a lot of people think, well, I would take this job, but it doesn't pay quite what I want. Now, as you gain that experience, particularly when you're younger, right? You want to gain this experience,
right.
You want a good resume, and then you can make yourself more valuable in the workforce.
That's right. And
it's more valuable to your employer and to society.
It reminds me of a saying I read some time ago that said, there's no elevator to quick success. You've got to take the stairs.
That's right.
And so you go one step at a time. Like you said, well, maybe your first job or second job, you're not making everything you'd like to make.
Yeah.
But if you show yourself responsible, you can climb the ladder.
And what a country we live in, the United States. I mean, you can come from the wrong side of the tracks and become the president.
That's right.
You know, there's an equal playing field as far as the opportunities. Ann Landers says, opportunities are usually disguised as hard work, so most people don't recognize it.
Mm.
You know, we often think, like you said, we want to be the vice president instead of going up the ladder to success.
You work your way up.
Yeah. That's right. Here's another text in Ephesians chapter 4, and this ties in with the devil. Verse 27. Ephesians 4:27, Paul said, neither give place to the devil.
Mm.
So, and that's what this series is called, God, Satan, Money, and You. And so here Paul says, don't yield to the devil. And then verse 28, he says, the next verse, let him that stole steal no more. So Satan tempts people to steal. And God says the way to overcome the devil and his temptations mm-hmm. is to stop stealing. And then it says, but rather let him labor, let him work. Working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needs. Mm. So the principle here is resist the devil, get off the couch, get a job, work so that you can then have an income so that you can give to people who are in need.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't say it better.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, here's another quote from, now this is kind of a strange thought to many people. This is from Councils on Stewardship, page 46. It says, is this the language of your heart? And then there's a prayer, and the prayer is, I am wholly yours, my Savior, and you have paid the ransom for my soul, and all that I am or ever hope to be is yours. And then it says, help me to acquire means. In other words, we should pray, Lord, help me to make money, to acquire means, to have a good job. And then it says, not to expend foolishly, not to indulge pride, but to use to your own name's glory.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I think many times in the church, you know, we recognize the value of giving, but sometimes we don't recognize the value of working so we can have the money to give. And this book says we should be praying, Lord, help me to acquire means. Help me to be able to make money. It's not wrong as long as we're doing it for the right motives so we can have means to meet our needs, help our families, be responsible, and then to be able to give to help others.
That's right. You know, Steve, I think of when we think about money, we always recognize that all of the money we have belongs to God. But what about our time? Our time all belongs to God, too. You know, in Colossians 3:23, it says, whatever you do, do it heartily so that as you do it to the Lord and not unto men. So when we work, we don't just do it for the money, right? You do it with all your heart. You do the best job you can.
That's right. That reminds me, it looks like you're going to have a text quick, but that reminds me of this verse in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10. It says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave where you are going. Mm. And we often quote this verse to show what happens when you die, that in the grave there's no knowledge or wisdom or work, etc. But we also need to look at this verse and realize that it's talking about what we should do while we're alive.
Mm.
It's not just a state of the dead text.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
A state of the living text.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, and the living, it says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. You should be, you know, using your talents, developing the abilities that God has given you, and you should be doing this not lazily, but with earnestness. Somewhere else in the Bible it says, "Don't be slothful in business,
right.
But be fervent."
Yes,
fervent in business,
I like that word.
Serving the Lord. And this verse says, you can't work in the grave, but when you're not in the grave yet, we can work.
We need to be working.
That's right. We need to be working.
And you guys probably remember the parable of the two sons. It's in Matthew 21, verse 28. It says, but what do you think? A man had two sons. He came to the first and said, son, go do what in my vineyard?
Go work.
Go work.
Yeah.
And he answered and said, I will not. But afterward he regretted and went. And he came to the second and said, likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir. But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of his father? It's the one who worked. So, you know, we might profess to do this and that, but really work is I don't think people rightly understand the importance of a good job well done.
That's right.
How it affects our character, how we view life, and so on and so forth.
That's right. And speaking of well done, Jesus is going to say one of two things to people at the end of time. Mm-hmm. He's going to say, well done, you good and faithful servant.
Enter.
enter into the joy of the Lord. And then the other group, he's going to say, depart from me, you that practice lawlessness.
And workers of iniquity.
Laziness often contributes to lawlessness.
Yeah, it does.
They can easily go together. And yet law keeping, when you look at the law of God, says we should work, we should rest, we shouldn't steal, we shouldn't covet our neighbor's things. And this is all part, really, of the third angel's message, which teaches in Revelation 14, verse 12, here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. This is not this whole money issue and working is not separate from biblical prophecy, from the third angel's message. It's part of commandment keeping. It's part of developing a character that we're using our talents, using our abilities so we can honor God and we can give more to others.
It's part of character development. I like what you said earlier that God put Adam in charge of the garden before there was even sin. Now, when you think about it, when we're on the new earth, we're not just going to be lying around all day long. We're going to have things to do. We're going to have constructive work.
Yep, that's right. We'll plant vineyards and build houses.
Yeah. That's right. We're not just going to be sitting in the New Jerusalem on a couch.
That's right.
So that's right. So we hope this has been a blessing to you, that you've been inspired by these Bible verses and our discussion. We do have some resources White Horse Media is making available. We're now making available this book, Counsels on Stewardship. We think it's very valuable. You can get it from our ministry. I also have a project that I've been working on for quite a while, and the website is growyourmoneywithgod.com that talks about stewardship and many principles. We have a free section there on the site under education where you can listen to a whole host of talks on end time finance and trading the talents and developing your abilities to work for God. So we hope that you'll check that out and that you'll join us again for part three as we continue on in the 7-part series called God, Satan, Money, and You.
We hope you enjoyed this video. Before you go, check out these wonderful books for sharing. The Truth About the Sabbath is packed with information for anyone wanting to understand the Sabbath subject. Also, The 666 Beast Identified. What it means to you identifies both the beast and his strange number 666. What do the beast and his number have to do with you? Both are available in paperback and ebook versions from White Horse Media.
We hope you've been blessed by this White Horse Media production. To support White Horse Media, please call us at 1-800-78-BIBLE. That's 1-800-782-4253. You may also send your donations by mail to White Horse Media, P.O. Box 130, Priest River, Idaho 83856, or donate online at whitehorsemedia.com.
And now for some breaking news. White Horse Media has just launched its new free online Bible school, Thunder in the Holy Land, filmed in Israel to help you and others discover the true teachings of God's Word. To learn more, visit whitehorsemediabibleschool.com. You'll be glad you did.